News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
It is. Good morning from Dan and Dalton. FM Talk 106.5 is 8:07. Fog has been a concern this morning, and you just want to be careful. It might not be right where you are right now, but you might run into it along your way, and that's what we're worried about. So just take your time. Leanna, for instance, was saying when she was on Rangeline, there was the fog. She got up on the interstate. Suddenly it was gone. That may not be the case for everybody in every spot, but I found the same thing very early this morning, that on the interstate I was okay. But that may not be the case now. Just take your time.
Yeah, well said. It is Tuesday, and there's a lot going on in this world of ours. On to discuss it with us is Quinn Hillier. You'll find his work at quinnhillier.com and also theadvocate.com, a new byline. Quinn, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
By the way, so congratulations on the new move. That's, you know, your home area, so it's got to be, you got to be pretty proud of that.
Yeah, it's with the Thomas Picayune and Advocate newspapers, which are now statewide in Louisiana, and they're actually in print, not just online. And I am part of the editorial board there, and it's a nice change. Good people, and it is, you know, where I grew up and started my journalism career. But that doesn't mean that I won't be paying attention to local stuff here, that includes the races we have coming up this year.
Yeah, and I want to get into those local races, but I did have a quick question for you, Quinn. Now that you're, you know, kind of diving in a little bit more into what's going on in Louisiana, of course, you got the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday, and what's kind of the, I'm interested, what's the vibe from locals, and of course, coming off the heels of that awful terrorist attack on New Year's Day downtown on Bourbon Street. What are you picking up on the vibe going into this weekend? Is there a bit of fear in the community, or are folks just excited to have this big event coming back to town?
No fear. New Orleans is so accustomed to disasters and tragedies, most of them natural, that they're very resilient, and they see this as a terrible grief-inducing one-off. Sometimes you have bad people that do bad things, and I haven't heard a lot of people really worried that much about security. As a matter of fact, security is so obvious, and the perimeter has been pushed out so far that the complaints are more about getting around downtown. I mean, much less the French Quarter, where you can't get into, but between ordinary street work, which is always going on in New Orleans, and road closures because they're extending the perimeter around downtown for security purposes, the bigger complaints were blasting the traffic and the inability to get around.
It is an amazing setup, though. I think people I've talked to that got to New Orleans for the first time for an event, especially a Sugar Bowl or Super Bowl, they're always blown away. Like, you know, if they're from the Northeast or out West, they're like, man, I've never seen a city like this. Everything is, like, right here. Here's the French.
Everything's walkable.
Walkable, and that is highly unusual for major league cities, but not for New Orleans. So we wish them well this weekend.
Well, and I do have to say, if you want to read something I wrote last week, I was at the very first Super Bowl that was played in New Orleans, Super Bowl IV with the Vikings and the Chiefs, and boy, was it different back then. I mean, yeah, there were 80,000 fans at Tulane Stadium, but I think the tickets were like $35, and of course, I don't think there was... I certainly don't remember any security like we would consider security today, and it was much more casual. It was a heck of a fun time. This is now the 11th Super Bowl there, and there should be more.
Did you hold on to that ticket from that first one?
I wish.
Oh, wow. You know, and not to get too far off course here, but I was hearing somebody the other day talk about this, Quinn. It's interesting. Back in the day, two of the bigger stadiums, college football stadiums in their day, Tulane Stadium and Rice, of all places, in Houston, of course, two big, institutions known for their they're graduates with great brain power.
Lots of history.
Those football teams back in the day did something right to build those massive stadiums like that, right?
Yeah, Tulane actually never had that big a fan base to justify a stadium that seated. There were more than 80,000 people at Super Bowl IV. The biggest attendance was actually for a Tulane-LSU game in, I think it was 1973, where there were close to 82,000 people.
Wow.
But aside from the Tulane-LSU game, I mean, you'd go to a Tulane game back in those days, and you'd be lucky to get 35,000 people in that 80,000-seat stadium.
Interesting. Well, they build it for a reason. So.
That's right. Yeah. Let's get some local news and the mayoral race. Starting to see more and more names drop in, and I imagine that will continue because Mardi Gras is such a great political opportunity for folks who are jumping into the race. The latest name we've seen, and it came down yesterday, Lanyap first report that looks like Alabama State Representative Barbara Drummond is at least thinking about jumping into the race, and she would be the third to officially jump in. Your thoughts on how to run a race here that can win you the seat of the next mayor of Mobile?
Well, how to run a race and what the mayor needs to do might be two different things. To run a race, you've got to get out and pound the pavement, and you also, I think, need to catch people's attention, because I think we've sort of grown apathetic, but in large part because Sandy Stimson, for the last 12 years, has done overall such a very good job, and people just see things as, you know, basically going along okay. And so I think there needs to be, you know, from the issue standpoint, somebody coming up with some fresh new ideas that will galvanize people, or at least fresh new themes to galvanize people. But meanwhile, you've still got to do the work where you walk the streets, you knock the doors, you get to the community events, and you just engage with people.
Yeah, and I've wondered who the first candidate, once they're talking about their platform and policies, who the first to break with the mayor in any notable way will be. It hasn't really happened yet. And like you said, there's so many good things going on here, but, you know, we're in the media. We see the text line and phone lines. There are critics of Mayor Stimson, usually has to do with either crime or blight, is usually what I see as far as complaints. But if someone does get into office, I mean, should they just keep the what Mayor Stimson has going and rolling, or what would you say they need to change?
Well, on the big picture and the big projects, I think they need to keep doing most of what Sandy Stimson has done. He has been one of the best mayors, probably the best mayor for a city this size that I've ever seen in my life, and I've been around a lot of politics and policy. And on the big things, we've got them all working in the right direction. Some of the little things, and so this is comparatively nitpicking, considering how many good things I've written in national publications about Sandy Stimson. So put that into the context. But there are two big areas, or two areas that were littler subjects, but still important, where I think he has fallen short and the next person needs to jump in.
Okay.
And that is our retail sector and our downtown blight, which are connected, retail sector citywide, and the blight, especially downtown, are still atrocious. It is really, really hard. My wife says this all the time, to find a local, like a mom and pop shop that provides services, that does craft work, that does, you know, that does individual thing. You can't find many fabric shops. You can't find this. You can't find that. You go downtown, and there's still all these boarded up, blighted buildings. And the retail sector is, other than the big box stuff, is not strong. Mobile is just not known for it. And part of the reason, and I've been harping on this for 11 years, is our sales tax is too high. Our sales tax is too high. It is absurdly high. It 10 years ago, it was tied for the highest in the country. now we've at least statewide exempted groceries from part of the sales tax. So that's good. Mm-hmm. But still, one deterrent to local businesses is a super high sales tax. We need to find a way to cut the tax. We're rolling in dough right now, by the way, so we can afford to lose a little revenue, but maybe you need to replace some of the revenue. But either way, we need to lower the sales tax. And the second thing is, Rob Hulbert was absolutely right in writing about this. This isn't a city thing. This is a county thing, which Connie Hudson, who's running for mayor, should talk about. The business property tax in Mobile County is a huge deterrent to small business. When you get taxed on every chair in your business office, on every old clock, it's absurd. And we have the business property taxes. We have business license fees. All of those sorts of things, whether county or city, or in some cases state, they need to be made a lot less burdensome on small business owners. Sandy Stimson hasn't addressed that. The next mayor needs to.
So, and we also have the lodging tax, by the way, just popped up last week.
Well, a vote could come today on increasing the lodging tax from 14% to 16%, also possibly coming up with a five-year extension for the Tourism Improvement District, which, remember, added, I think, $1 a night to hotel bills down, maybe just downtown, or it might have been through the city of Mobile. They say they want to raise money for the airport and for the new arena, but while we're talking about taxes, yeah, that's two big items that are on for the council soon.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, let's go to a break here, because I do have some more things I'd like to talk about with you, Quinn, about your perception of where the city of Mobile is right now, and maybe your thoughts of where the future could go, okay?
Good. I've got a couple of others, yeah.
Very good. 18 minutes after 8 o'clock, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. The text line is open, always is open, 251-343-0106. Back with Quinn Hillier after this. Thank you, Kane. 823, Dan and Dalton, Mobile Mornings, Quinn Hillier with QuinnHillier.com and The Advocate in Louisiana. Quinn, how are you, man?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
So I'm talking about downtown. A couple questions here real quick, a couple of points. Number one, the blight of the buildings that are less than attractive in between other thriving businesses, I suppose, on Dolphin Street especially, and other areas too. Are those buildings themselves owned by like a handful of people that
they might be, I'm not really sure. And I do have to give this mayor credit. His administration, especially in the first term or two, really attacked officially blighted properties and used the tax laws. And, you know, if taxes weren't paid on them and they were blighted, they really moved in to clean them up. The problem is with people who do just enough to maintain their ownership but don't actually do anything with their buildings, and that's tough to handle legally. The way, when you can't kick them out legally, then what you've got to do is make it more attractive for other people to come in and buy the buildings and do something with them. And you do that, I had recommended a downtown business district where you substantially reduce just downtown the sales tax, and the mayor, I think, misunderstood what I was saying, and he sent me a note that was not on point. But we've got to do something about that. Another thing, and this might sound minor, but Mobile is a city of trees, and this mayor, this administration, is really bizarrely anti-tree. I mean, again and again and again, you've seen complaints about them cutting down trees that people didn't want cut down. And there is this long-running fight about trees that out in Mobile, West Mobile, that they haven't replanted for 3 years. And look, I try to get involved and help out both sides come together, and they didn't. And I don't like the tone on either side, but this is the simple fact. It was 3 years ago that the city or the tree commission identified scrub trees to be knocked down and to be replaced. There's an outside group that wants to pay for it, And for whatever the reason, for whatever the excuse, 3 years later, you still don't have trees planted out there. And last early summer, they said absolutely they will be planted in November. It's now February. They're not only not planted yet, but they're not even bought.
Okay, so
that is the kind of thing the mayor has not done well, and the next mayor needs to do better.
All right, so the Civic Center is coming, the Amtrak is coming, the new hotel downtown on the water is coming, the nearly downtown airport, I'll call it, because it's not downtown, actually. You know, it's got quick access to downtown. Mobile is forever, even when I moved here years ago, been considered the city of potential. So we're not there yet, I'm sure. But how do they, you know, how do they jump the barrier?
Well, okay, and the expression, it was a great expression, this sort of tongue-in-cheek, the city of perpetual potential.
Yeah.
The good news is because of Mayor Stimson and a city council that sometimes grudgingly has worked together, that potential is being realized in the big things. And that's why I started this by saying, I'm sort of nitpicking, but what this mayor has done on the big things, on the airport, which is going to be huge, on the Civic Center, which to me looks like we're paying too much, but I think it's going to be a good project, on so many different things, on the cruise ship, on the big things, we are closer to reaching that potential than ever before. I do want to see ground broken on this bleeping bridge for which we have been waiting nearly 30 years now, but it looks like it's on track. But for that, the mayor gets big credit. What I'm saying is the next mayor and the candidates for mayor need to complete those things, but meanwhile, say what they're going to do about some of these, you know, less sexy issues that I'm talking about.
And just a couple minutes left here, but another, you know, complaint that some folks had against the Stimson administration was that big controversy with former Mobile Police Chief Paul Prine and that lawsuit, which is expected to go on and on and on. For the next mayor, and as they campaign and get into office, what do you think that relationship with law enforcement needs to be like? I mean, we're seeing a surge in pro-law enforcement sentiments from folks here recently. Do you think that might be an issue for anyone running?
Well, yes, but although, frankly, from what I've seen, the lawsuit is completely meritless, and it should be thrown out of court. Paul Prine was probably, in most ways, doing a good job as chief of police. Some of the stats supported that. But he does serve at will of the mayor and the council. And, you know, so he did some things that they didn't like, and they got rid of him. Fine. That doesn't give him a suit. But the crime has not gone down as much overall as Sandy Stimson pledged would happen when he ran 12 years ago. And, you know, that sometimes that's not something American control.
Sure.
But we do need to hear a plan from the new candidates for where do you go. There have been some good strides made by this administration. Where do you go to keep the good strides going and to get the overall crime rate down?
All right. Thanks again, Quinn. Appreciate that.
Yeah, we'll keep that conversation rolling through the election. Quinn, if folks want to read your work, quinnhilliard.com, and now a new spot. And
oh, there
gone.
He goes.
It's the Advocate, by the way.
By the way, you know, you've got a judge running, a former judge, so he might have a little idea about crime since those people stand in front of him or have every day.
Good point.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 834. Going to get to some texts here real quick. Got another thing we're going to kind of bounce around here with you. That we stay kind of local with Quinn, so we'll expand out. Source with Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. I don't know if you saw this, Dalton. He said that the ICE arrests in Houston have kind of created a ghost town. And it's not from the arrests that swept everybody up.
No one's going out.
They're hiding.
Wow.
So you have those.
And I say no one. It's not no one.
In a city of 6 million, somebody's going out, right?
Yeah.
But that's interesting that obviously we've seen reactions to Trump on the border, people self-deporting, the deportations themselves going on that are rapid fire, and now people not showing up on the job or in Houston communities where they go to eat and, you know, socialize, if they're illegal immigrants, it looks like a lot of them are because they're simply not hanging out at Pepe's stand anymore. So anyway, that's the interesting story from ICE that these ghost towns are now being created. And I think on the job, I think Jeff was getting some texts yesterday.
I think we were getting some texts yesterday.
People not showing up, right, on the job. And some of those being people who would be being pursued by ICE.
Yeah, so I wonder, what states, what locations have the most empty work sites right now? And it's, you look at the, first, the response on the streets, and I've really, protests, it's America is a protesting country. That's what we are, right? But when you're trying to get your point across that you, don't think they should be deporting you.
Yeah.
Why would you burn the flag of the country? Yeah. Like, so, and I'm not the first to point this out, obviously, but you're upset that illegal aliens are being deported back to their home countries. So to show your anger at that, you fly the flags of the countries you're so scared to be deported back to and burn the flag of the country where you want to stay. And oh, by the way, stopping traffic on interstates. A lot of those people who, by the way, probably agree with you or agreed with you before you started these stunts.
Now they don't.
And it's interesting also the
policy. In L.A., right?
Yeah, L.A. that was happening. And there's protests all over. I think L.A. have been the most in your face, I would say.
Stopping the traffic, yes.
But also seeing which politicians, lay down the gauntlet for Trump. And I think that tells you about at political aspirations in many ways. You know, this New Jersey governor, Phil Murphy, is he the new leading Democrat? I mean, he seems to be stealing all the headlines. He's wanting to fight ICE single-handedly and Doge. He was part of this presser that was yesterday in other protests. They're angry with Elon Musk and crew taking apart USAID and some of these other wasteful government agencies. But New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy, did you see yesterday he said he has an immigrant in his home? And so the way he said it, he's sitting like on a stage with his wife, or he was talking about his wife. I think she was up there with him. I saw a video. He was sitting next to a female when he was talking. I think it was her. It was an interview with Blue Wave New Jersey, a progressive grassroots organization. And Phil Murphy says, he's the governor, Tammy and I, that's his wife, Tammy and I were talking about, I don't want to get into too much detail, but there is someone in our broader universe whose immigration status is not yet at the point that they are trying to get it to. And we said, you know what, let's have her live at our house above our garage. And good luck to the feds coming in to try to get her, Murphy said. So he's acting like he's going to stand at the door. You know what this is? She's got to be a housemaid or something like that.
More than likely,
And that's a major part of this. You know, you have liberals who forever were fighting on behalf of the laborer who had been taken advantage of. Can you believe they're taking advantage of all of these immigrant laborers? They're paying them scraps. They're making them work 20 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And then because a lot of these same politicians are getting cheaper maid services, or the lobbyists who pay them to keep their companies in their states and allow them to hire immigrants for lesser wages, the people that are leading this Democratic Party, I mean, it's obvious that because they are benefiting so much from this cheap labor, that's, and the votes that were coming in, they're making it clear where they stand on things. I want to see if, will Homan go to the governor of New Jersey's home.
Well, I think their sweeps are intended to get more than one. You know what I mean? I mean, they're playing the odds.
It's a bold take to say I have an illegal living in my house.
It is. And everybody knows the governor, and he lives in the mansion in Trenton. And, so obviously political grandstanding. And whenever a politician, Republican or Democrat, is talking about, me and Tammy, or, so you're trying to appeal
down the middle to the family element. You're a good guy, and you're married, and you never had any scandal in your life. And me and my wife, who I'm holding hands with on stage, have an illegal living above our garage. It's just stupid, and it might get. It's probably one of those stories that's going to be highlighted or has been on The View.
Yeah, and they will just applaud him, right?
Yes.
Also, in our state, Birmingham Mayor Randall Woodfin pushing back on the immigration efforts of the Trump administration. Sunday, he was on MSNBC with Al Sharpton. April Marie Fogle writing about this over at 1819 News and points out, you know, a big topic of our discussion this morning has been the legislative session, which begins today in Montgomery. Governor Ivey's state of the state tonight, and immigration is something that will be a major part of the platform for this legislature. They try to get some of those laws passed, but we've talked about the crime too, and that seems to be number one for Governor Ivey and many others in the state, and pointed out Birmingham set a new record for homicides last year with, what was it, 151 homicides, most they'd had since 1933. And what does the Birmingham mayor go on MSNBC to do? He goes on to complain about Trump and ICE enforcement. He said the city's contract, he was asked, so April Marie writes, when specifically asked about the city of Birmingham's working relationship with Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Woodfin said the partnership focused on human trafficking. He stressed that the city's contract includes an exception for what Woodfin described as, quote, our contract does not participate in any administrative dealings as it relates to immigration status with DHS. We're very clear about that. But he said it's important the city continues to be a welcoming city. Our doors are open to those who are law-abiding. Our doors are open to those who want opportunity. And our city is open for those who want to take care of their family. And then began promoting his book, A Love Letter to Birmingham. And so this is now twice since Trump was sworn into office, April Marie writes, that Woodfin has said Birmingham is a welcoming city. And I think he obviously has political aspirations above and beyond being the mayor of Birmingham.
And book sale
and book
aspirations.
Yeah,
I would propose this, Dalton. He wasn't on MSNBC to promote the fact that Birmingham is this welcoming city. He's come up with a narrative that Birmingham is this welcoming city so he can get on.
To promote his book and political aspirations. Yeah.
So the narrative is to get on MSNBC. They didn't pluck him out of the blue and said, this mayor's doing amazing things down there in Birmingham. He's doing all this to get the attention, to get airtime on MSNBC. That's my take.
Well, it's also interesting. I mean, they're talking to a representative of a city in a deep red state.
Yep.
And to have someone go against the grain in a state like Alabama, that's also notable, too, which is probably part of the reason Sharpton keeps inviting him on, I would say, as well.
He's like the perfect guest.
And
the book sales are soaring in Connecticut.
Let's see. Look at the text line. And, you know, some people could probably try to strap enough those on to make somewhat of a bulletproof vest in the city. Maybe that would keep them a little safer.
All the books.
Jason, put it out. And I appreciate that, Jason. He said, isn't the Chief Prine situation a huge strike against Stimson's leadership? Not to mention the inability to work with the council.
I think it's a stain, for sure.
This texter, on the heels of our conversation with Quinn, more fabric shops in downtown Mobile. LOL, Quinn never fails to entertain me. Steve says, trees. Got it. Thanks, Quinn. Let's see. Pat. He said, okay, 42. This was from yesterday.
Yeah, on Jeff's show, right.
42 illegals aren't at work today. They're scared to drive from Mississippi to the bayou. Bob says, Dalton and Dan, if employers were supposed to be using an E-Verify to hire legal employees, why are we having big gaps at restaurants and landscaping businesses where folks are not showing up? Doesn't this tell on the employer that they were not following the law from the get-go?
I think it does.
I tend to agree. Moz says, evidently the governor of New Jersey deems himself above the law. Yeah, well, he's making hay with it, right? He's getting his name in the news and his face on the cameras. This texture says, sounds like a dare to me, what the governor of New Jersey said. Uncle Jake says, immigrants have gotten smarter. The labor cost isn't cheaper. They just work harder and complain less. They want 25 plus an hour. That's, I guess, somewhat news to me, Uncle Jake, because, you know, a lot of the reporting I've seen on this is that in many different, you know, industries that immigrant labor is still much cheaper than what the going rate would be for American labor.
Yeah.
And could it be that far off, the reporting on that? Maybe in certain industries, they're asking for more money.
Yeah, it might be. Like Jeff was talking about as little as $2 an hour or something like that. But when you look at the big, you know, when you multiply
picture,
that.
Yeah.
And also, you did a great job maybe a month ago or so, finding that quote from who was it? Schumer. It sounded just like a Republican in 2009 talking about one issue or another. And you'll see a lot of that now when it comes to tariffs, immigration, all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in 2019, Schumer was agreeing with Trump about tariffs and China. Now, obviously, he's holding up, the avocado and
the
Corona?
The avocado and the Corona, yeah. Here was, by the way, your favorite Senator Chuck Schumer doing just that. And he broke out the Corona. Do you think anyone drank that after that?
It's going to affect beer.
Yeah, that's what beer
okay.
Looks like.
It's going to affect your guac.
Your guac. Isn't that the guy that was grilling the raw burgers with the cheese already on top?
That's him.
Do you think he makes good guacamole?
I don't think that was Schumer.
It was Schumer.
Was it Schumer?
Yeah.
The other guy that's kind of portly.
Portly guys know how to make burgers.
Okay. And what's funny about this is a lot of the media was losing their mind over this thing over the weekend, and yesterday morning they couldn't wait to open their shows with all of this insidious tariffs from Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And by mid-afternoon, two out of three of the countries had stepped down and said, okay.
Yeah, Mexico first after that meeting, and then Canada after that. And now the thing that happened with the Canadian deal and Trudeau saying, we'll put, this number of National Guard at the border there, we'll elect or put someone in place as our fentanyl czar, I think is the way he put it. And a lot of folks are saying, well, yeah, he already agreed to that deal under Biden, and Trump is just taking credit for what Biden was able to do. But if you remember how that came about, Trump had already won the election. And remember, he had that meeting with Trudeau where he was basically patting him on the head and saying, you don't deserve to be prime minister.
Yeah.
Canada should be the 51st state of America, and that you're not taking care of business the way you need to, and tariffs are on the way. So Trudeau.
And in between that, he's pretty much out.
Right. He's been, he's like not long for that job.
Yeah,
there are people that are running to be PM because his whole.
He's done.
Yeah, they've lost it. And so Trudeau wanted to make a deal with Biden rather than Trump,
right?
And said that they were going to do this and that to avoid tariffs once Trump came into office.
That's right.
But what they said was that they would do that over a term of, it was either like 6 or 8 or 10 years.
Yes, I think it had been 10, but spread out, right? And
mm-hmm.
and that's...
So they agree to a deal with Biden that makes it look like they're doing something, even though it's so long term, there weren't going to be any immediate effects.
It's not nearly the same deal at all.
So Trump puts that pressure on him, and then he says, all right, we're going to do it. And Trump puts the extra 30-day delay on both of these. Now, the Canadian one seems to be catching a lot more. Folks are catching grief a lot more for Trump going after Canada than going after Mexico because, you look at the stats, much more fentanyl and human trafficking
coming from Mexico.
Is coming from Mexico.
Yeah.
Not that it's not coming from Canada. It seems to me like the Canadian border are where the more well-to-do people who are trying to get into the country are able to finagle their way through there. And they have gotten fentanyl stopped at the border in Canada, not nearly as much as Mexico. But Bob Rae is the Canadian ambassador to the UN. And while Trudeau, when he came out yesterday and was striking a much more, conciliatory tone with Trump.
By the end of the afternoon,
Bob Rae went on Bret Baier last night to talk and was incredibly confrontational. And, Baier pointed out that back in 2017, while he was technically a private citizen, this UN ambassador for Canada, Bob Rae, said Trump shouldn't even be allowed in Canada. That, like, he just hates this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And Baier said, have your thoughts changed on Trump at all since then? And he said, no, they really haven't. Well, now he's the Canadian ambassador to the UN, and he was going off on Trump last night, but here's part of what he had to say.
Well, we've been talking with the administration for quite a long time about the border measures that we need to take, and we need to take together. We all take the drug issue seriously. It needs to be dealt with, but let's not use tariffs to deal with it, because the tariffs completely upset markets and upset employment and upset jobs.
Yeah, by the way, while this was all going down yesterday, Trump was holding maybe 12 of the most athletic Canadians hostage as the Florida Panthers Stanley Cup winning team was in the White House celebrating their last Stanley Cup. So he had Canadian hockey players standing right behind him as all this was going down.
That's pretty funny.
Play this one more from Bob Ray. Okay. He used the term that is Canadians' favorite term this week, cut it out.
Well, we've been talking with the administration for quite a long time about the border measures that we need to take, and we need to take together. We all take the drug issue seriously. It needs to be dealt with, but let's not use tariffs to deal with it, because the tariffs completely upset markets and upset employment and upset jobs.
He doesn't sound as angry there, but there were parts last night in that interview where he was...
Yeah, very angry.
Very, yeah.
Cut it out.
Cut it out. I'm not hearing many stories. Not many stories coming from up there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. 851 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig, and we will preview the Jeff Ford Show coming up.
Yeah, more text to get to, 251-343-0106. Let me tell you about Casa Mobile. It stands for the Court-Appointed Special Advocates in Mobile County, and they're doing great work transforming the lives of children and youth who get caught up in the child welfare system. It is a local nonprofit that provides one consistent and caring volunteer trained to advocate for each child's best interest. But right now, a call to action. Casa Mobile urgently needs more volunteers to reach their goal of serving every abused and neglected child in Mobile County. They're looking for someone who will address that child's right to a safe, loving, and permanent home. And if you've listened to Mobile Mornings and the news we have each morning, you can imagine how many of these terrible stories involving arrests or worse leave children basically stranded without someone looking out for them around here. And Casa Mobile is trying to help fix that problem. Nick Saban is he represents Casa as well, and you can find him on their website, casamobile.org, telling you more about the organization. Volunteer training has begun if you're interested or feel called to help out with Casa Mobile. If you don't feel right, now is the time to help by volunteering. You can also donate today and find out all of that information at Casa, C-A-S-A, Mobile. org.
All right. U.S. Representative Barry Moore is going to be a guest on the Jeff Poore Show today. He's going to be in the first hour about 9:35. Then moving to number two in the lineup will be Trustville Tribune's Scott Buttram. Enjoy Jeff and Scott's conversations. And also a weekly guest, ALGOP Chair John Wall, about 11:35. And there you go. That's the Jeff Poore Show next on FM Talk 106.5.
Pat texting in, I dug into this yesterday. E-Verify requires a social security number and a photo ID. E-Verify doesn't even check the numbers once they get turned in by the employer. I know a lot of folks, once E-Verify, remember how many politicians in D.C. were saying, you have to push E-Verify. You have to get this through. There were a lot of folks saying that was basically just a way to get further information on law-abiding American citizens, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to maybe be the case. Guys, this is from an unnamed texter. Guys, most electrical, commercial, and residential comes from Mexico. A lot of lumber comes from Canada. People trying to build aren't laughing about the beer and guac. Cheese wagon.
Why wouldn't he bring it up then in a more serious manner?
Nah.
If you're going to be serious about it, don't talk about your happy hour.
Cheese Wagon says, crash northbound 65 in Moffitt Road. Martin says, a lot of these illegals aren't working as cheap as you think. Look at the vehicles and clothes they have, better than I have. You know, I'm not a person that's able to look at clothes and tell you they're expensive. I don't know.
And I'm not.
I can look at a vehicle and tell you it's an expensive vehicle.
Is it really yours?
And these days with holes in clothes that are expensive, you just never know. Get one to the yard or clean the house. They'll make $60 to $100 an hour or more. And this texter says, that guy has a Jordan Peterson accent. In Canada, they all have Jordan Peterson accents. He is.
Oh, man, Jordan Peterson. All right, Dan and Dalton wrapping it up. Jeff Poore is next. It's 8:59. We are back with you in the morning beginning at 6 a.m.